to smoke about this time of the day. And all this is keeping me to where I can't go do it. Now, I'm gonna go do it.
Well, hello, and welcome to About This Time of Day, a Teen Mom podcast, where we are straight chillin' in 2009 and would like to stay there. My name is V, I am your host, and finally, you guys, we are going to talk about Teen Mom. Can you hear the joy in my voice? I am just elated. I am so excited. I already recorded the joiner, which I'm spoiling already, but get ready for that because I cannot wait. Yes, today we are going to get into the very first episode of Teen Mom, now known as Teen Mom OG. Was anyone else like really pissed off about that when they rebranded it OG? God, it seemed like it was really forced, but my thirsty ass tuned in anyway. Today's episode companion is Bubblegum Chem Extract. It's okay. Another one that I probably won't get again. It's very light and flavorful, however. I get a very distinct grassy flavor, not bubblegummy. That's fine. I'm worried it might actually be sativa. I typically try to stick to indica, but man, I don't know. I was on some other shit this episode, so you tell me what you think. The first episode of Teen Mom aired on December 7th, 2009, a day which will live in infamy. It was called Looking for Love, and the episode synopsis is as follows. This is actually something I wanted to do with the 16 and pregnant episodes as well. I just forgot and felt like for continuity's sake, it would be easier just to skip it for the 16 and pregnant episodes and start it with the Teen Mom episode. So we'll start every episode now. Not necessarily with the air date, but definitely the title of the episode and the description of it. Single teen mom Farah starts dating against her family's wishes, while Macy begins planning her wedding to fiancé Ryan. Caitlin moves back home with her parents, and Amber's anxiety about being a mom gets the best of her. Okay, I'm in there. I'm ready for it. This sounds pretty good. We saw all four of these girls in 16 and pregnant, as we know. I spent 4 hours telling you about them. I hope you fucking know about them by now. I apologize. Thank you for listening to the podcast. This description has me hooked. I'm ready to find out more about what Farah's doing. Why the fuck is she dating? Because we both know that's a bad fucking idea, Farah. We talked about this. Macy planning her wedding to Ryan. And Caitlin moving back home with her parents. We know that's not going to be a good idea. Back home with her parents. So was she already with Tyler? I guess we'll find out. And Amber's anxiety about being a mom gets the best of her. So basically, we're going to hear a lot of Amber whining. Oh my God, don't you just love it? Don't you just love it? Ah! So I'll be honest, I haven't yet figured out how I want to go about addressing the episode. I don't think we can go linearly. I think we'll have to split it up by each girl. So the editing may be a little choppy here and there. I apologize. It's going to be a trial and error basis, guys. And hopefully my commentary is so entertaining that it just pulls you on through. Hopefully. But either way, thank you again so much for tuning in. And I guess we're starting off with Farah. The very first episode of Teen Mom opens with it opens with all four of the girls giving a very brief introduction to the show itself. Kind of like, hey, remember me on 16 and Pregnant? Now watch us on Teen Mom. But after that initial introduction, we open with Farah. We get a little brief recap of her time on 16 and Pregnant. They do reference that infamous car scene, but they gracefully leave out the part where Deb physically assaults Farah. I mean, she just hits her in the arm, but they don't show you that in the introduction. So we're already kind of seeing Farah as an antagonizer here. We catch up with Farah modern day back in 2009. And she tells us that she's been very busy since having Sophia, her daughter, who, by the way, was the winner of the Teen Mom Baby Name Game. Congratulations, Sophia. Congratulations, Farah. Congratulations with anyone with the name Sophia Loren. If you're listening to this podcast, what are the fucking chances of that? Unless Sophia is actually listening. Anyway, we learn that Farah has been very busy. She is in culinary school. She is actively working at a restaurant, I think BW3. and she is modeling as well. She does still live at home with Deb and Michael, her parents. I imagine if she has all this time to do these things, they must be helping out a little bit. Though there is one problem that Farrah has that she shares with us off rip.
I've been so busy, I haven't even been on one date since Ophelia was born.
That scene transitions into one where Farrah is changing baby Sophia with a couple of her friends in the room. We hear one of her friends asking her, "Oh, by the way, have you talked to Cole?" Now, we don't know who Cole is. This is confusing. I feel like I'm already missing something. I don't know why they did it this way. But then Farrah says, "Oh, yeah, he wants to call me after the modeling thing." Okay, so apparently Cole is a model. Fine. And we're gonna go out and do whatever. So I guess Farrah's planning a date with this mysterious Cole man that we've never heard of before in our lives. Sounds fun. Farrah does say that she's been trying to warm Deb up to the idea of her dating without much success. Yeah, Farrah, I'm not really surprised. You have a fucking newborn. Deb and Farrah have a conversation about what's happening that night. Deb just asks casually offhand as Farrah's getting ready to go. She lets Deb know that she's going to meet up with a friend and they're going to get ice cream and that she'll be back at 9. And right away, Deb says, 9 o'clock? That's really late. How long does it take to get ice cream? If she was just a regular teenager, I would say that reaction is so fucking annoying. But she does have a newborn. 9 o'clock for a mom is late to be out. Who's putting the baby to bed then? It's not gonna be Farrah. Okay, so that's not good. Deb does an interesting thing, though, and suggests that he come over to the house and meet the family very first thing. Well, Farrah is not about that life.
So are you bringing him home so I can meet this person?
No, I'm not bringing him to the house the very first time I ever meet them.
But that's what is important for me to meet them.
No, it's not.
That's a test of their character. If they'll come in here and meet me and
Mom,
meet
okay, well, if
Sophia,
I think of it like that, if you think of it like that, then I would have to meet their parents on the first date to only be fair.
Well,
and
then
how,
you know,
no, I don't want to do that.
What you're getting into. So tell me about this kid. What about him?
He's totally cool.
How do we know he's totally cool, Farrah?
I don't know if he's totally cool. I said he's totally cool with people having a kid. He has no problem with that, Mom.
Yeah, right.
So this one, I don't know if I can really relate to, because when I was Farrah's age, my parents knew who I was going out with and who I was seeing. I don't know if that means I was overprotected. Strict Catholic upbringing may have had something to do with that. I'm not sure. But I don't think the request for this boy to come over is too crazy because, again, baby or not, Farrah, you're only I don't know. If she's 17, maybe not. But at 16, definitely. I really should do my homework a little better, you guys. Then we also have that interesting bit there at the very end where Deb asks Farrah, "So what? Tell me about this guy. What is he like?" And she says, "Oh, you know, he's really cool." And she trails off while saying, "With people having a kid." So Deb, thinking she's done with the sentence, immediately jumps in like, "How do we know he's totally cool, Farrah?" Which I think is kind of crazy. That's a weird way to respond in general. You could just be like, "Oh, what's totally cool about him? Why do you have to take it to that level?" The next time we see Farrah, she is about to go on a date with Cole, the model that she met on a shoot or something, I'm not sure, but they're going out to get ice cream, and they have some small talk walking into the place. It seems like a cute little match. You know, they're both models, and they're both far too good looking, which is very annoying. We see them sit down with their ice cream, and we hear this exchange. I'm going to forewarn you, I'm sure this is cut and strewed by MTV's editing crew. But it's pretty fucking funny anyway, listen.
So by looking at me, would you cry that I'm a kid?
No.
Good.
You're gorgeous.
I know.
I know. She sounds so unimpressed. But I think they took that from another part of their conversation. It's just such a weird comment to make. What are they trying to make Cole out to be? Someone who thinks motherhood is ugly? I don't know. That just seems like a very weird angle to put, just like with Counselor Dawn. I didn't know what angle they were playing with her. I don't know what angle they're trying to play with Cole. He comes off unassumingly, but at the same time, I don't like him. So this will be interesting. We'll see what happens. Farah and Cole continue their little date and walk down by the pier that's near the restaurant they're at. So they're by a little lake. They sit down and they start having this conversation about, you know, if Farah was in cheerleading all 4 years or not. Farah does explain to Cole that although it did suck for her to have to leave cheerleading, something that she loved to do because other people were essentially bullying her, she says, look, I just don't have time for people like that. If you're not here to support me and have a good time, I don't want to deal with it. I like that quote, you guys. Truly words to live by. After Farah's seemingly lovely date, we see her back at the homestead with her family. Ashley, her sister, is over and they're having a discussion in the kitchen with Deb. She's in the room. I'm not sure if she's actually in the discussion. Farah is making a microwave pizza while Ashley reprimands her for going on this most recent date that we got to witness just a few moments ago. And she's saying things that are 100% true. You know, when you have a baby, the baby needs to come first, Farah. You can't be out dating, Farah. It's not the time for boys, Farah. We see Farah react as any person backed into a corner would react. She lashes out. She tells her mother to shut up. We see her yell back at Ashley, who, to her credit, stays cool. Eventually, we have Farah take the pizza out of the microwave while she's trying to tell Ashley and her mother, Deb, no, I don't need any advice from people who don't know anything about my life. Just dumb shit like that and things that you don't really mean. She takes that pizza out of the microwave and Ashley can't help but comment, you cooked that fucking pizza wrong. She doesn't swear, but apparently Farah cooked the microwave pizza on the inside of the tray instead of on top of it like you're supposed to. Ashley promptly makes fun of her for doing that and says, you want to be a chef? You want to go to culinary school? It lightens the mood quite a bit and you can feel everything relaxing. The levity doesn't last too long, though, because it gets serious again when Ashley tries to sum up and say, look, Farah, I'm just telling you, before you know it, you're going to start missing out on precious time with Sophia. It seems like it's cut in, but you hear Farah say, shut up again, and she walks away. And then next you see her off on the side, looking very lonely, eating her incorrectly microwave pizza. So it ends on a sad note all around. Farah's story continues with her walking into a restaurant with Cole, and Farah's voiceover informs us that she's going to keep dating Cole no matter what her family thinks, even if that means Cole has to meet her parents. Okay. That's gonna be fun, won't it? Farah and Cole go into the restaurant, sit down, try to decide what they want. Farah says she wants her own pizza. Girl, yes, me too. Right now, in fact, I'll take my own pizza. That would be great. Farah asks Cole if he's ready to meet her parents, and he's like, oh yeah, no problem, parents love me. And she says, well, my mom is pretty nice. What? Okay. Then Farah says, well, are you excited to meet Sophia? And I'm over here like, you're meeting Sophia already? Holy shit. Because they've only been dating for 3 weeks. I guess in teenage time, 3 weeks is a really long time, but we do have Farah asking him if he's excited to meet Sophia, and he says, yes, she'll be easy to meet, and I'm still, like, kind of cringing at the idea. They leave the restaurant, head on over, and Cole gets to meet the family. It seems to go well enough at first. They're shaking hands with Michael and Deb and welcoming him into the house, and of course, Cole meets Sophia as well. Farah is holding her and just kind of shows her to Cole, and he shakes her little baby hand, and it's a nice meeting, even though it's really, really soon for that. And then we get to see Deborah interrogate him.
How many serious relationships have you been in?
Two, I'd say.
What do you think happened to those relationships?
The girls cheated on me, and then, like, just after that, there's no trust.
So you want honesty?
There has to be trust, yeah, definitely.
What else is important to you?
A physical attraction. I mean, that might be kind of shallow, but...
I would hate to think that the only reason that you would be interested in Farah would be for a physical attraction and a physical relationship. I understand being young, all right? But I don't go for being ruled by your crotch.
Yeah.
Whoa, hold on. He just met her, like, 2 fucking minutes ago. Are you fucking kidding me right now? to ask questions like this? What do you think happened to the past two relationships that did not work out? The dude is like 17, 18 years old. He was probably like the last two relationships he had. Who knows how long those even lasted? What kind of question is that? And then to be saying this, oh, I would hate to know that your one attraction to Farrah is her physical looks. Well, no, we don't want a solely physical relationship for Farrah. Really, we don't want any relationship for her right now. I can see why Deb is drawing that line in the sand, but surely there are more subtle ways to do so while still getting your point across. This is just insanity. Let's keep listening.
Yeah.
I will never go for that because I don't want any more Sophias. I don't need that. Me personally, with our religious background, we believe in abstinence until you get married. That's where we're from, okay? I don't know about your religious background, so can you tell me about that?
Don't really have any. We don't go to church or anything.
So not really religious. Would you like to go to church with us?
That's fine.
We would love to have you go to heaven with all of us.
Okay, that is straight up my cue to exit. No fucking way. No fucking way am I staying around a girl who, no matter how fucking pretty you are, no matter how many modeling shoots you've been on, am I staying around your fucking crazy ass family asking me to go to heaven with you guys the first fucking time I meet them? Wild. Absolutely wild. And these are the moments that I live for. Doing this Teen Mom podcast. What a mind fuck. Could you imagine walking in on something like that? Put yourself back in your teenage shoes and imagine you're walking into your boyfriend or girlfriend's house, meeting their parents for the first time. You sit down. The first thing you get is, what have your last two relationships been like? Why did they end? And what is your religious background? Yeah, me in high school would not have had any good answers to any of those fucking questions. While I'm a recovering Catholic, I'm really trying to quit. It doesn't go well with parents. Thank God no one's ever asked me that, because no one in their right fucking mind would ask anybody that. Wild. That scene simply ends with Farrah's voiceover saying, well, that didn't go as planned. Farrah and Cole try to recover from their interrogation by Deborah by going to a party with Farrah's friends. The voiceover says she hopes that the party will ease things after things got so weird at her home, meeting her mom and her dad. But it's not long after that that we literally see the whole party in a single circle just discussing how Farrah and Cole met, how they're models together, and how they're doing this, and how they're doing that. That's really fucking awkward too, I think, if you ask me. This is supposed to be like a house party. We're supposed to be mingling, and we do see a little bit of that to start the scene, but it very quickly goes into this organized discussion of Farrah and Cole as an item. They get to tell the whole story that they met about 3 weeks ago. They've been having a great time since, and her mom's a little scary, but he's in it anyway. And that scene ends with Farrah's voiceover saying, if my mom didn't scare him away, this guy might be a keeper. I don't know. His whole look, there's still something not quite right about him. We next see Farrah at work, and we see her getting off her shift and going to meet up with her two friends who we saw her with at the beginning of the episode. It looks like she invited them there because when she walks over, they're like, okay, so what's going on? Farrah gets situated next to them and tells them the news. Apparently, some anonymous girl reached out to Farrah and let Farrah know that Cole pretty much has another girlfriend. This girl lets Farrah know that he spends at least one night a week with her, and pretty much any time that he's not with her, I guess that's the time Cole is spending with Farrah. So that's not good news, because literally we just went through this whole fucking thing of Cole meeting the mom, having an interrogation, meeting fucking Sophia. God, I told you 3 weeks was too early. Well, Farrah would like to volunteer her friends that she is called there to this important meeting to go on a 2-hour road trip with her the next day to tell Cole off to his face. 30-year-old me thinks this is a dumb idea. 16, 17-year-old me would be all over that, especially as a friend. Yeah, let's go. Let's tell him off. But let's find out what Deb has to say about it.
So what's going on today? Travis, Brad, and I are going to Grand Island. Because
when is this, Farrah?
I'm telling you, this is what this is. So some girl messaged me the day after Cole left, and she said to me that he spent the night with her Friday.
Spent the night with her in what way?
Probably had sex with her. That's what her whole situation was.
So he lied to me.
Oh my fucking God, Deb, this is not about you. This is not about you. How did you possibly make this about you? Oh my fucking God, Deb.
So he lied to me.
Okay, I'm going there, and I'm making it clear, and I'm not dealing with any of this anymore.
I wouldn't waste my time on him. I wouldn't waste my time, my gas, or my life on him.
Their conversation continues. Deb asks Farrah, who needs you, Farrah? Who in this house needs you? And Farrah answers, Sophia. And Deb argues the fact, and I will give her this credit, okay? That's what we're doing here on the show today. And we have Deb say, well, here's how I see it. You're going 2 hours there, spending at least 3 hours there, and then driving 2 hours back. That's a whole fucking day that you could be spending with Sophia. How about you spend that with Sophia or do something for school or do something here that's constructive instead of wasting your time on a fuckboy? Yeah, I get that now. I get that now. As an impetuous 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old, I did not get that. We'll see how Farrah's experience goes with this because she's decided she's going. She needs someone to babysit, which is where Deb comes in. Deb does give in, says she'll watch Sophia for Farrah, and allows Farrah to go on her little mission. Oh, don't think that Deb agreed to babysit without a fight, by the way. It definitely was a fight. The conversation gets heated. It pretty much ends with the two of them yelling at each other and saying, well, you know, Farrah, I don't think you should be pissing away all this time and spending it on someone who's living a double life and a liar. Farrah finishes the conversation by calling her mother stupid and agreeing that no, she will never let anyone treat her like that again. Farrah, I'm trying to root for you, and I know you just get mad and you don't know what else to say because you're a small child, but calling your mom stupid on cable television looks really fucking bad and is probably, well, I'm watching it right now, so it's on the internet forever. Everyone gets to see that moment. The scene continues and we see Farrah and her friends in this pizza place. I think it might have been the same place that she and Cole went to the first time we saw them on a date, which is kind of funny. But they're already sitting down and Cole comes in behind Farrah and grabs her shoulders from behind and goes, hey, and I'm thinking to myself, don't fucking do that. It's not even me. And I'm just don't want you. Don't touch me, dude. I'm sure if like they were on good terms and he wasn't a creepy weirdo, I would feel better about it. So we see him sit down with the three of them. It doesn't start off too weirdly. And then Farrah asks, hey, do you know a Tara? And Cole at first replies no, but then follows up with, oh, do you mean Tina? Wrong answer, my friend. Are you fucking serious? Did you really just say that? Oh, man. Okay, I'm not sure what he's trying to do now. Are you trying to be honest or what's going on? What follows is this very awkward back and forth. Farrah's two other friends excuse themselves to go to the restroom. Why did everybody have to be there for that? Anyway, so the two of them are left at the table and Farrah basically says, so you have a thing with this girl? And he's like, yeah, I used to. And she's like, when was the last time you hung out with her? Was it before you came over to my house last week? And he's like, no, I haven't seen her in like 3 weeks, pretty much since we started talking. So Farrah calls his bullshit. How about we call her right now and ask? And immediately Cole is tensed up. Cole says, do we have to do this right now? How about we do this later? Which to me translates to, I don't want to do this in front of the cameras. It's going to make me look bad. Okay. Well, Farrah doesn't care much about that. They get Tina Tara on the phone, and Farrah insists on taking the phone, asks her the pertinent questions that she had been asking Cole, and gets the same answer that Tara Tina told her before. While Farrah is not happy, the camera pans over to her two friends who have gone from the bathroom to the bar and are now watching from afar. It's very funny. Farrah ends her final conversation with Cole by the following.
I just think that's really lame of you to come to my house, meet my parents, meet Sophia. Do you have anything else to say? There's not a sorry, there's not, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Well, that's
I'm
cool.
Sorry.
It's okay. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, I'm glad I told you to say sorry so you would say it. That's so good.
So I'm going to admit something right now that I'm not necessarily proud of or bragging about, but I have to say, I remember being 19 and watching this, and when Farrah says that line where, oh, I'm glad I told you to say sorry so that you would say it. Oh my God, did I feel that on a real deep level. No stranger to fucked up relationships myself, I dealt with people who I had to tell to say sorry so that they would say sorry. And it's, again, an emotional immaturity coming to the surface. Absolutely, 100%. God, you guys, I guess I relate to Farrah way more than I fucking thought. This is not a good revelation. Oh, my God. After that, Farrah gets up from the table, goes by her friends who are at the bar, and all three of them walk out together. One of them says something like, "We're never coming back." Well, good. Let's stay far away from this weird place where you meet this weird model in Iowa. I'm glad this Cole thing was over just as quickly as it started, but I'm not glad at the fact that Sophia had to be brought into it at all. We see Farrah in the car on the passenger side, just saying how much she misses Sophia, how glad she is that's over with, and how much she just wants to get back to her baby girl. It's dark in the car, so you can't really tell, but it's pretty much inferred that she's crying about Cole. And maybe about wasting her time. Her scene ends and fades out, and it goes into the montage, ending the entire episode. We open up on Caitlin, second in the first episode of Teen Mom, and we get a very brief synopsis of what her story was. Of course, they play all the most gut-wrenching moments, and truly to make sure you understand how traumatic it really was with an unsupportive family at that. We open up on what I think is a very appropriate scene where Caitlin tells the viewer, "Since I have had Carly and I don't want to ever have to go through that again before I'm ready, we're going to get on birth control." And they show Caitlin and Tyler both going to an OBGYN appointment for Kate, and they're in there discussing birth control. Honestly, I think it's a really cool moment to see just Tyler being supportive in that way, any teenage boy being supportive in that way. I remember back at this time, as Teen Mom got more popular, you saw online, if you were looking for it, oh, Caitlin and Tyler are relationship goals. I'm sure there were quotes and stuff and YouTube music videos of pictures of them, like crazy weird fandom. And it's moments like this that inspire that. One thing that's not so great about this appointment is that Caitlin straight up lies to the OBGYN. Not good. The doctor asks Caitlin if she and Tyler had been intimate since Carly had been born, and she tells her yes, and then follows up, "Did you use protection?" Or, to quote the episode, the doctor is shown to say, "Did you use something?" There's a small pause in the room where Caitlin's not saying anything. Tyler, who was there, is not saying anything or answering the question. But Caitlin figures out, I better just say something quick, and says, "Yes. Protection. We use protection." You can see the look on her face is just a little uncomfortable, but the doctor doesn't say anything. They continue with the appointment, and Caitlin decides to get the Mirena birth control, and there is a very helpful note on the screen to the viewer that says, "Mirena, a form of birth control placed in the uterus by a doctor." So that's good to know. Educational. We're still doing the documentary aspect of it. Good for you, MTV, for trying to stick with it so far. After the appointment, we'd get to hear Caitlin and Tyler talking about the little white lie they just told there.
"You lied.
Well, I lied because she scared me. I thought I wasn't going to be able to get the birth control if I told her that we weren't using protection. That she was going to be like, oh, can't get it. Gotta check.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. And all of a sudden, you just lie like that. I was like, oh, my God, no. And then you told her that we didn't have sex after your period. Us having unprotected sex is stupid.
It's just because you just don't think when you're in that moment sometimes.
What the fuck am I hearing? Are you fucking serious? Like, I'm not trying to be shaming or anything like that, but it sounds to me like they are often having unprotected sex. It sounds like there are two separate instances that Caitlin is lying about here, which, all of these semantics or whatever you want to call them aside, it is dangerous to do that. Please don't lie to your doctor. I'm not one to talk. I hate going to the doctor and I often lie to my doctor. But about things like this, you really shouldn't. It could just be so complicated, and really all it's going to mean is taking a quick pregnancy test, making sure it's safe to put this inside you. It's not like it's going to delay it or anything like that. So be honest with your OBGYN. Just saying. But how can you continue to have unprotected sex in that way after that experience? I don't know. I mean, be safe. Get on birth. Why wasn't she already on birth control? Like, the second that she could, why wasn't she on birth control? That's my question. Because to give a little context, when I was younger and entering that world, so to speak, I was looking up Planned Parenthood. I was trying to figure out how to make sure I would never get pregnant because my parents could never fucking know I was having sex. Are you joking? But I guess that goes to speak to my privilege, because one, I had, I guess, technically unsupervised access to a computer. I was definitely using the computer to look up Planned Parenthood and how to get there, and I knew how to erase the browser history. So I was privileged in that aspect. Also, being aware of Planned Parenthood existing. I'm not sure even how I knew about it. It does go to speak a lot to privilege and access. So I should not come down on Caitlin in that way. I'm glad that she's taking these steps now, even though she's lying to her doctor. Thankfully, we don't really see it have any adverse effects on her going forward, at least in this episode or in the Teen Mom universe that I remember. So that's good too. But her scene ends there. That's really short. I feel like Ferris went on for a hot minute, but we're already on to the next segment. Sorry, Caitlin. Caitlin's next segment is also very short for some reason. I think it's pretty clear at this point who they're giving the most attention to. Amber and Farrah. I don't know why, but that's fine. We'll roll with it. But we come in with Caitlin here packing her things to move out of Tyler's mom's house and move back in with her mother and Butch. She asks Tyler to come with her, to which she receives a resounding no. Not doing that. Don't want to be around Butch. Don't want to be in that environment. And I can't fucking blame him. Based on what we've seen and what we've heard Butch say, there's no reason to think that anything would be different, especially since it seems like tensions have only gotten higher between at least Tyler and Butch. I wouldn't want anybody to be in an environment like that unless I absolutely had to be. So I don't blame Tyler at all for not going. We see them have a discussion that's a little tense, but not a fight by any means.
You would never, like, change it just to, like, have peace with everyone?
He needs to make the move this time. He needs to grow up, step up to the plate, and be the dad that he's supposed to be. Or do you have any negative feelings towards your mom?
Well, I'm disappointed, but then again, I put myself in her shoes, and I totally understand where she's coming from.
You know, I don't know. You're so different than me, and it bothers me sometimes.
I think Tyler's tone of voice here is really telling, and that might just be me inferring, but he sounds almost exasperated. Like, oh, and disgusted. Did you hear that ew? Like that little ew in there? Go back and listen if you missed that. Caitlin doesn't really respond to him saying this at first. She's just kind of listening and waiting, as I feel like a lot of people with anxiety tend to do. I have to wonder if in this moment, Caitlin isn't feeling a little bit like, oh, well, maybe I should be more like you so it doesn't bother you anymore. Or maybe I should rein myself in order to make sure you still like me. He just kind of goes on saying, be sure to defend Carly if it comes up, because she's here now and we made the right decision and we need to defend our daughter. And I feel like Caitlin just doesn't want to fight. She doesn't want to fight with Tyler. She doesn't want to fight with April or Butch. Now she's presented with this conflict. Okay, we have, well, I'm going home and I want to have a peaceful life back at my home with my mom and my new stepdad. But it's not fair of you to ask me to trade my peace to defend my daughter, who I already did the most righteous thing possible for. We see Caitlin's hesitancy to what Tyler is saying, and I totally get that because she has had nothing probably but turmoil for the past year and a half since she's been pregnant and had Carly. Tyler says, well, don't sweep it under the rug. He says, don't book it, but I don't know what that means. So we're going to say, don't sweep it under the rug. No, she doesn't want to do that. She just wants to maintain her composure and her peaceful life as best she can since she is getting uprooted from your house. In Caitlin's next scene, we see her make the move to April and Butch's house, and things seem okay. They brought Caitlin's dog to welcome her in the van as she was taking her stuff and loading up, getting on back home. We see them pull into the driveway, walk into the house. It's a good feeling. You're getting a good feeling watching this. And tragedy doesn't strike. I'm not going to say that, but almost right away, they get into a very heavy conversation. Why? Can't we just breathe for like 2 seconds, Caitlin?
Are you still mad at Tyler?
I'm ashamed. I'm disgusted with him. That's about it. I still love him. He's my son. Well, that's natural.
He says he still loves you, too.
It's called natural love. You guys are the first ones that are in my family. They're the other kids away, but that's your guys' choice.
You're right.
No, it ain't really easy for us to deal with that.
Not easy for me to deal with either.
That's your guy's choice. If you want to.
That's right.
Because now you know you gotta get a kid you can't see.
I can still see her.
Yeah, whenever you want.
Twice a year.
You get up in the morning with her, change her diapers, kiss her, hug her. That ain't gonna happen every day.
That's okay.
That's gonna be a scheduled visit. It ain't no different than you being locked up and coming to visit me in jail. But hey, what you guys want?
Anyways, glad you're home, Caitlin.
Me too.
Whoa, shout out to April for saving the day there at the end. Holy shit. Welcome home, Caitlin, indeed. In fact, during this scene, April has her arm around Caitlin, supporting her in what she's saying to Butch. Fucking kudos, April. We need more of this from you. She must be sober right now. I guess that said, though, she's also not defending Caitlin, but that could be out of self-preservation, so I'm not going to knock it. And also, what the fuck? Like, okay, yes, Caitlin started that conversation, but to be fair, the conversation was about if Butch was mad at Tyler, not about placing Carly for adoption. It went there so quickly, and I understand it. Well, that's the reason Butch is mad at Tyler. Okay, I understand that. But then Butch goes out of his way to guilt Caitlin and to make Caitlin feel bad and stupid and wrong for her decision to place Carly for adoption. Fuck you, dude. Are you fucking serious? Get the fuck out of my face. I would have immediately regretted that decision to move home if I were Caitlin. God. Yeah, April really does come in the clutch at the end there. You know, well, welcome home, Caitlin. She doesn't want to talk about that. She's not feeding into it. Okay, we need to give credit where credit is due. That is one of my mottos for the show. And we have to do that right now here with April and to Caitlin, because if we listen to that audio, she is giving very, very adult and calm reactions to things I would be going shit fucking crazy over. Don't even with me. Unbelievable. I know Butch becomes a fan favorite later, but watching this, I'm really not sure how, because this behavior is fucking despicable. The scene continues on with Caitlin and April actually going into Caitlin's room. They sit down, and they are actually going through pictures of baby Carly that they received from Brandon and Teresa, or possibly some that they took at the birth. It's a great moment to witness. They're having one-on-one time that they haven't had in a very long time because she's been with Tyler. Caitlin and April actually exchange an exact moment where Caitlin says, you know, even though Butch and Tyler are still mad at each other, Mom, I'm glad we're not. Oh my goodness, I want to hold on to that. April looks at her and says, me too, and she has a smile on her face. She really, I'm not even joking this time, she has to be sober. She just looks so much better in this moment here. Her face is full, it has color, she doesn't have dark circles under her eyes like we so often see her. We are seeing prime April here. Let us cherish it, love it, and want more of it, and hope that we get it. We next see Caitlin and Tyler at an outdoor backyard barbecue or something with family and friends. Pretty chill atmosphere. Tyler's sister, Amber, is there, unrelated to Amber Portwood. She makes an appearance first time on screen. We did hear her voice in Caitlin 16 and Pregnant, but we did not meet her. So here she is. I don't have too much to say about this little scene. Once again, I feel like Caitlin is being kind of shorted here. There's not really a lot going on her end right now, so that kind of sucks. We just essentially see Amber talking to Tyler saying, look, you know, Dad's still upset and that sucks, but it's just not going to change. It's family, it's blood. You know, you got to do what you got to do to make it right. I don't think she's asking him to forgive Butch, but she's kind of saying, don't make it a big deal. Can't you just compromise your feelings so we can all get along? That kind of thing. That's what I feel like it is. I don't know. It's a tough conversation to have. Tyler doesn't seem to want any of it. He, again, says, no, he's got to come to me. He actually even says it would be better if Dad were back in jail. If Dad were back in jail, this adoption process would not nearly have been as hectic as it was, according to Tyler. And I think we see him right now being very resentful and not afraid to show that emotion to his sister, someone he clearly feels comfortable expressing himself to. We haven't seen Tyler be uncomfortable expressing himself to anybody outside of Caitlin, so that's interesting to note as well. Is that going to impact them going forward? Caitlin's voiceover closes out that scene by saying she never thought that their choice of adoption for Carly would be so difficult for their family to accept. And it's true, we're seeing them probably just about a year out from the adoption. And while, of course, those wounds are still fresh, it's long enough of a time for emotional growth to take place. I feel like we see that growth in Caitlin and Tyler. Maybe a little bit in April, but Butch is exactly the same man he was a year ago. Oh good. I can't wait to see this. Next up, Miss Macy. We meet up with her having dinner with Ryan, her fiance, and the Edwards family, Ryan's family. We get to hear a little recap from Macy about what she's been through, how she met Ryan in high school, lost her virginity to him, which is like a weird first thing to say, like, oh, okay, hi, yeah, okay. And then became pregnant with little Bentley, who is also at the dinner table. And we get to see for the first time since 16 and pregnant. And he is just a little peanut chubbers. Oh my God. I freaking love Bentley. He can't be any more cuter than he is in this little dinner scene right now. We have Macy letting us know that she and Ryan did break off their engagement for a while, but things improved with them. They got re-engaged, and now they're at the table discussing wedding plans. Ryan's mother, Jen, asks them, so are you guys still thinking about October? And they're like, yeah. And the viewer doesn't know. The viewer doesn't know when exactly this is. Again, this aired in December of 2009, so October, we're thinking October 2010. But she says, oh, well, you know, that's 2 months away. We have to get planning. What? Oh my fucking God. Can you fucking imagine being 2 months out from your wedding and having planned nothing? The wedding invitations needed to go out last week if your wedding was going to be in 2 months. Are you fucking kidding me? Holy shit. This is 2009, but I was going to say, especially in these times. Yeah, so 2 months they're planning on getting married. And I'll have you know, and if you're not watching along with me, you know, Macy kind of has her head down looking at her plate. She doesn't really seem engaged in the conversation, but she's talking. I'll say that she's not enthused. How about that? And Ryan is, well, we know how Ryan is, pretty much a stone wall. And that's what we see here as well. One word answers here, there, and nothing much more than that. But then Mimi Jen lays something down for them.
I would like for y'all to go to that marriage workshop. It's not like a counseling class, but it's just like a workshop that it's like 4 hours, and it just talks about how to communicate.
Yeah,
and
it's
just
great.
You know, I think it would be good for y'all to do that. I think it'll help you, like, when you do argue and disagree, that y'all can communicate a little bit better, learn how to deal with issues. If you guys do these couple things, then I will help out with the wedding and pay for the honeymoon.
Oh, you'll what? You'll pay for the honeymoon? Okay, we'll do whatever the fuck you want. That's my answer. Like, nah, you'll pay for the honeymoon too? Well, I guess we're going to counseling. But they don't really respond to this. Macy's voiceover comes through as the scene ends and says, if we need counseling already, should we really be getting married? Valid question. I'll give that to you, especially as a young girl. But it isn't a bad idea to go to counseling when you're about to get married anyway, I would think. I mean, to each their own, understandably. Not every couple needs that. However, especially in this case with Ryan, the way he is, and what we've seen from him already in 16 and pregnant, marriage counseling could be a good idea for them. So to answer your question, Macy, in your case, no. But generally, it's okay. It's not a big deal. We next see Macy and Ryan in a diner having lunch with little Bentley. So cute and pudgy. They are sitting at a table and discussing just how happy they are that they love each other and are getting along again. Macy says to little Bentley, aren't you glad that your mommy and daddy love each other? And Ryan goes, you don't like to hear us fat, do you? What weird things to say to your baby. But that's how we open back up on Macy and Ryan. They have a nice conversation at lunch. They talk about how happy they are that they're getting married and whether or not the other person is ready. Macy says, yes, of course I am. And Ryan says, yeah, I am. So great. Sounds like we're both ready to get married in 2 months, guys. If we're sure and we've decided, can we move on? Because this seems like we're behind. In fact, as they're leaving the restaurant, Macy's voiceover comments that if we are going to get married, we better start planning. Macy says, oh, I would like a big wedding, but I don't want to plan it. Maybe you can help me plan it, Ryan. He does his typical Ryan thing and says, well, how am I going to plan it when I'm out of town all the time? That's kind of shitty, though, don't you think? Macy says to Ryan that she doesn't want to plan a wedding on her own because she doesn't want him complaining about all the choices she made thereafter. He says no, he won't. And honestly, I kind of believe him on this one. And here's why. I don't think he would care enough to complain, right? Do you think he's going to give a shit what color the napkins are or who the DJ was? He's not going to give a shit. But this also tells me that she is used to hearing him complain about things that she does for him. That would be the only other scenario in which I could see somebody logically coming to the conclusion that I'm doing this thing for you, I'm taking on this burden for us, I don't want you to complain about it. Well, I've been there, so I know the feeling, okay? And I think that's what we're seeing here come out with Macy and Ryan. So interesting to get that little view of maybe their actual relationship, the reason they actually need to go to counseling, and definitely a hint at Ryan's amount of gratitude in the relationship and how he treats Macy. Again, I might be reaching, but I'm willing to take that risk for the podcast. When we next see Macy, she is going out to dinner with her friends. I'm sensing a pattern. But she's going out to dinner with her friends and they're all discussing her upcoming wedding.
So Ryan comes back right before vacation?
Yep.
He's gone a month.
Yep. He's gone for the whole month?
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Are you freaking out?
The reason he's traveling is so he can learn about parts and stuff like that.
When's your wedding plan?
When's my wedding?
Yeah.
We're getting married October the 3rd.
You're talking about like this coming
up? Yeah. Yeah.
Like
2 months? 2 months.
Like 2 months. The party's about to be here.
Even her friends can't believe it's only 2 months away. They're probably wondering where their invitation is because they still have to send the RSVP back to them in time for them to get a proper head. I'm not even getting into that. Anyway, we see them have this nice conversation. It's a good moment. Macy's having a good time. Little Bentley is there as well, if I didn't mention it, because Macy's a good mom and where she goes, Bentley goes, and she doesn't complain about not being able to leave the house. After they finish their dinner, Macy's girlfriends come back to Macy's apartment and they're looking through wedding magazines and looking at different dresses and styles and things like that.
Macy, are you pear-shaped, busty, plus-size, or apple-shaped?
Definitely this one.
I'm none of those. I'm banana-shaped. I'm like this little.
Hang on, there's more. Wait, if you're if petite, you're tall, here you go, petite.
Look at that. Oh, that's pretty. What time is it? Don't you have to go to work?
Yeah, I need to leave.
Right now? Yeah. Okay, we'll have to do some planning stuff, ladies.
Okay.
Before we leave.
Oh, yeah.
We only got like
to don't get remind a month.
With my friends about to leave for college, it's hard to believe I'm staying behind to get married.
So we get this bittersweet moment with Macy and her friends celebrating her upcoming wedding, but also the reminder they're going off to college. They are going to be living in dormitories and going to classes. When she's going to be Miss Susie Homemaker, well, probably not knowing Macy, meaning like she'll be out there working, doing her own thing, doing what she has to do. But she'll be doing the mommy wife thing instead of the path that her friends are taking at this point in their lives. Of course, Macy can do these things as a mother, as a wife. It's just one of those things like, oh, we're on a time crunch to plan for my wedding because it's 2 months out. And also, you guys are going to college. You're going to be living another life that's completely different from mine. At least that's how I feel when I hear another one of my friends is getting married. We next see Macy and Ryan together in their apartment with little Bentley in a hopper or whatever you call those things. And Macy is lamenting the fact that Ryan is going to have to leave for a whole month. That's a long time to leave a mom by herself with a kid. I'm sure she's had experience taking care of Bentley all on her own, but the distance, especially since we see they've been getting along better, that's going to suck. And Macy tells Ryan this, like, I'm really going to miss you this next month. And he's like, yeah, it's going to suck. And she's like, no, really? He's like, really? You're going to miss me? Yeah, stupid. What the fuck are you talking about? That's what I mean. I just feel like Ryan has never really been all there. And neither of them are very emotional people, which is why this next part really stuck out to me. The scene continues to time lapse to later that night. We see Macy and Ryan settling in for bed once again, stating how much they're going to miss each other. It's honestly kind of cute, even though it's said in a flat, monotone way, so you're not really sure if they're feeling anything at all. It's still things we've never heard from Macy and Ryan. Let's listen in.
Don't leave.
Thank God.
What am I gonna do while you're gone?
I don't know.
This sucks.
Yeah.
Love you.
Love you.
More.
Whatever.
Good night. Good night. Go turn the light on.
No, you go turn it on.
So even in their most tender of moments, Ryan can't be bothered to do jack shit. I guess at that point, you know, he's leaving for a month, so you won't have to hear it for another month or so you let it slide. Ah, oh, fuck. Okay. The next morning.
Hey.
Don't leave.
I got it.
Don't leave me. Have you told Bentley about?
No, I'm gonna go in there and clean by and get my bags.
Bye.
Love you.
Love you.
See you in about a month.
All right. Don't get no other girlfriends. All right. All right. Bye. Love you.
Love you.
So a nice little parting moment we have between Macy and Ryan, and Bentley too. He does go in and say a separate goodbye to little Bentley, even though he's fucking mumbling everything and you can't really understand it. You kind of get the feeling behind the mumbles and the tonality of them. I won't insult my audience. So we have Ryan going off for a 1 month work trip where Macy will be on her own taking care of Bentley in their apartment. And 1 month after Ryan gets back, the two of them are supposed to be married. Let's hope there wasn't anything more than just a joke behind Macy's comment of don't get any other girlfriends while you're out there. I feel like sometimes when people say that, they're actually really insecure and actually very worried about that happening, but need to make it a farce and a fallacy in their head, like no way could this possibly be true, so let me make this joke. We have that comment from her, which makes me a little nervous, and then Ryan just thinking, ha ha ha, no, of course not. And I can't read behind this dude's eyes, which is alarming. Normally I can read people extremely easily. His expression here If I'm being honest, looking at his expression in his reply to her when she says that, he's surprised that she would say that, and I feel like there's something behind his eyes that says, well, if it happens, it's gonna happen. That's just my interpretation. I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like the look, considering that we can hardly get any emotion out of Ryan. If I can read anything, it makes me worry, because it's got to be coming through pretty strong at that point. And that's what I see here. So I guess I'm hoping that by the time Ryan comes back, they'll have the wedding already pretty much ready to go, and it will just be a smooth transition from coming back home to married life. Yeah, because that always happens in these kinds of shows. Oh, Miss Amber Portwood, we have arrived. We meet up with Amber. She gives us her own little synopsis, how she didn't mean to get pregnant when she was young. Go figure, I'm not sure anyone really does. But she and Gary recently broke up. He quote-unquote begged to have her back, and she gave in. Wow. Okay, Amber. Okay, I feel you. Basically, we just see Amber at 2009 present day. She is going through her daily routine, essentially. Her voiceover lets the viewer know that she is feeling pretty cooped up. We, in fact, see a scene of her and Leah looking out the window where she is lightly tapping on the window and saying, yeah, I went out too. I went out too. I'm stuck in here too, to Leah. I'm like, oh, God. Okay. What's stopping her from going outside? Does anyone know? But anyway, so she goes through her routine, feeding Leah, giving her a brushing her teeth, giving her a toothbrush, feeding Leah, brushing her teeth, all from her bed. Isn't that a little weird? I feel like that's weird. Maybe, like, feed her at the table. I don't know. Am I making that up? I might just be high, you guys. Let me go back and let me see if she actually feeds Leah on her bed. One second. Oh my fucking God, you guys, she does. This is our first introduction to her in Teen Mom. And she's feeding her baby on a bed. This may have given credence to Reddit's claims of Amber just being a couch potato. Leah, by the way, looks so fucking cute. Oh my gosh, all these little chubby babies are just dying to get their cheeks pinched by me. Stay far away. We have Amber here doing her daily routine from bed, complaining that she's stuck inside all the time and how she has no help around the house. And we do see a sink full of dirty bottles and dishes, which she says is the work of Gary. I cannot validate the statement at all as a viewer, so I have to go on what she is showing me. And based on what I know of Amber so far, I'm not really willing to give her the benefit of the doubt. I'm sure she's contributed to that mess, and I'm sure it's on both her and Gary to clean it up, and neither of them have. But of course, Amber and Gary have a fight.
Look at her knees, baby.
She's crawling. She's mobile now.
I know, but we need to put pants on her to let her crawl. I don't like letting her crawl on this floor. It hurts her knees. We don't got no Persian carpet in here.
Boo-boo.
I need formula.
We need formula?
Yeah, baby.
I texted you and said get it.
I couldn't.
That's not telling me why you didn't get her formula on the way home.
Well, I want to get it now.
Leah wants out.
Okay, I have to stop it here for just a second. Leah wants out? What a strange thing to say. What an odd way to put that. That sounds very much like you're treating your child like a dog. I mean, I don't want to make light of it, because that's kind of shitty. And it might just be a regional thing, like, you know, how people say put up instead of put away, or washer instead of washer. I don't know. I'm thinking on my feet here, you guys. But I just think this is a very strange way to say that about your child. Leah wants out. Take Leah with you. Leah wants out. And it could also be projection that she wants out. She wants to get away. She wants to escape. It could be that as well. But it's just a weird thing to say, and I wanted to comment on that really quick. We'll continue.
Leah wants out. Won't you take her with you to get the formula?
She needs to take a nap.
She's in this house just like me all the time. Put Leah in her car seat.
I gotta get the car seat. I want to bring it out here. Is that okay?
This is exactly what happens every time I want you to do something. You get mad.
Because you don't want to watch her for 10 minutes more.
Oh my God, you're not complaining. You cannot complain.
I'm just saying, 10 minutes.
I do it every single day.
It's more work. It's more work putting her in this and taking her to the store than it is going in the first place. I got her, don't worry.
You're such a jackass, Gary.
once again, what is with this? Well, she's stuck in here just the way I am. We're stuck in this house, Gary. Okay, I'm not saying that she has the privilege of her own car. I'm not saying that. I am wondering why she can't take Leah for like a walk, because she's standing on two legs. You know, she'll just take her outside and walk around on the front lawn or something just to get out of those four walls that she's complaining about so much. And then, do they have a stroller? Because it's very strange to me that she's complaining this much. We're inside all the time, Gary. We can't go out, Gary. We can't do this, Gary. Well, what are you doing? You seem to be just sitting on the bed getting baby food all over the place. I don't know. I sound mean. I'm sorry. I shouldn't sound that mean. Okay, so already we're seeing a lot of unhealthy dynamics. Specifically, I'll name a few. The way that she is talking to him. You always get mad. This is why I can never ask you to do anything. I'm using my weekly therapy here, you guys. Okay, so speaking in absolutes and black and whites, very negative, is not conducive to emotional healing. I'll stop. And then we also have her talking about, you know, you're a jackass, Gary. Okay, so name calling, not good, not good. Not gonna say I never did that. We've all made mistakes like that in the past. We've all gotten into arguments like that to where we've said things we regret. And I mean, some are more heated than others. I am not here to judge, but I am here to judge Amber because there is a child involved, of course. And this is happening with Leah standing right the fuck there. They're having this argument right in front of her. She can feel that tenseness around her, and she can't understand it because she's a fucking one-year-old. Amber and Gary don't see any problem having this argument in front of her. So that part we definitely need to examine here, because that's what she's going to learn. These are the communication tactics that she is going to bring with her into her adult life. We can only hope that she has a strong mother figure that will instill that in her. On a completely unrelated note, I would like to give a shout out to Leah's stepmother, Christina. We love you, Christina. We next see Amber going out to a restaurant with one of her friends and Leah in tow. She has Leah in a little baby carrier and they get seated at a cool Mexican restaurant. It doesn't look like Amber gets a high chair for the baby. When we just saw Bentley out with Macy and Ryan, he had a high chair. But we don't see Amber get that for Leah here, and they're approximately about the same age. She can sit in a high chair. Why didn't Amber get her a high chair? I don't understand it. But predictably, we see baby Leah get a little fussy. She doesn't want to be laying down like that. You can't fucking see anything, Mom. Oh my fucking God, she's staring at the ceiling. Y'all are having your dinner? What is she doing? So yeah, she starts getting fussy. Amber starts getting anxious. She can't quite handle it. She's not sure how to eat with a baby on her lap. She doesn't know why Leah's so fussy and why she's so needy and why she can't be away from Amber at any point in time. Just get her a fucking high chair and that might solve 50% of your problem right there. I'll tell you that right now. But we don't see that happen. Instead, we get to see Amber's friend offer to hold Leah so Amber can eat a little bit more. Leah doesn't like that. She wants to be with Mom. So we see Leah react and cry a little bit louder again. So Amber decides at that point, maybe it's time to just pack it in. Why don't you get her a fucking high chair first? Doesn't happen. They wrap up their leftovers and they head out to the car. Don't get me wrong, Leah, she was being a little loud, she was being a little disruptive, but, I mean, I've been around worse kids in a restaurant. I wouldn't have really thought twice about it if I were in there, honestly. But Amber gets in the car and is not happy with the way that went.
This is my life.
You are fine.
How much can I go through in a day?
Yeah, this is ridiculous.
Who cares? Nobody cares. My fiance didn't care. He thinks it's a piece of cake to watch Leah. I'd rather watch Leah than go to work. What are you talking about? You don't know what you're talking about. My life consists of four walls. That's my life. Four walls. And I stare at a piece of cake because I can't go out. Because all she wants to do when I go out is cry because I'm not holding her.
Being a mom stresses me out. I need help.
Now, a few things I want to point out with that audio there. You hear Leah, baby Leah, in the background crying very loudly. But V, you just told us she wasn't that bad in the restaurant and you didn't play any restaurant audio. I'm starting to think I can't trust you. No, my fellow friend, please. Believe me, baby Leah was fussy. She was a little loud, but nothing a fucking high chair couldn't fix. Speaking of, as I said, you heard her in the background. She's being very loud. She is in her car seat in the back, facing away from Amber, as safety precautions dictate. Maybe she's upset because she has to be sitting prone like that all the fucking time. Or reverse prone. What is it when you're laying on your back? But maybe that is why she's screaming, Amber, take your head out of your ass for like 3 fucking seconds. And think about, what is she missing? Me, looking at it from an outsider, it's very easy to say. I'm sure in that moment it is difficult. You're under stress, you're under anxiety, you just want to eat your lunch, and you can't do it because this kid is crying. But just try the high chair. Please, Amber, just try it. And also to point out her views on Gary and Gary's views himself of what it's like to take care of Leah. We don't know what Amber does all day. Did we just see her feed her baby on a bed without a high chair? Yes, we did. But that doesn't mean that happens every day. I gotta be fair, you guys. I'm sorry. It is not fair for Gary to be like, oh, I'd rather stay home from work and watch Leah. It is hard. It takes a lot to full-time take care of a baby. We see Amber doing that, and while maybe she's not our favorite person in the world, we don't see her getting a lot of credit. So we hear that come out here, and we hear her blow off some steam here. Now, obviously, there are mental illness issues here at play, which we will get into in Amber's next segment. If you heard her ending there, I need help. We do see her visit a psychiatrist coming up, or I'm sorry, we see her visit a health clinic coming up. And she is handed Klonopin like it's candy. When we next see Amber, she is actually heading into the health clinic, and she is going to get help for her anxiety and stress issues. She goes in and sees a doctor. I presume he's a doctor. And just essentially tells him exactly what's been going on with her, how she's really not even able to get out of bed most days. And interestingly, she says the only thing that gets her out of bed is when baby Leah is at the side of the bed, shaking it or otherwise moving her and saying, like, Mama, get up. What the fuck? What are you? What? Why is she out of the crib when you're still in bed? I guess we're not counting Gary. I guess he might be home when this happens. But the doctor doesn't seem to think there's anything weird about that. He continues to ask, well, do you think you're depressed? Well, yeah, I would say so. That sounds like depression to me, sir. The doctor says, okay, well, I want to refer you to a psychiatrist, but I can get you started on the medication today. And you can just hear the casino bells going off in the room. She's scored. She's gotten what she needs when she is there for. But we as the viewers don't know exactly what she is there for yet. They leave the health clinic, they meaning her friend that she was actually just at the restaurant with, and baby Leah, who was in the waiting room with her friend as Amber went in for her appointment. All three of them leave the health clinic. And we next see Amber back at home with Gary, where we learn this doctor just gave her some Klonopin. How is it so easy for other people to get these drugs and I can't fucking get these drugs? I swear, I will always choose weed over Xanax. Don't get me wrong on that either. I will never defy the one love, Mary Jane, 420, 710. But I'll be goddamned if a Xanax doesn't hit it when I am freaking the fuck out, okay? This bitch just walks into a health clinic, gets some Klonopin, goes about her day. Am I following the rules too much, you guys? Am I a rule follower? Yes, I am. That's why I waited till I got my medical card to do this podcast. We see Amber back at home with Gary, and she is just filling him in on her day at the doctor.
So I went to the doctor today. He prescribed me Klonopin to help me calm me down.
What's the problem?
Mainly stress. And stress. So all I heard was stress. I need to take my medicine.
Okay, so the fact that she can't articulate back to Gary what the doctor said to her makes me think she was like straight up just drug shopping. I mean, we know that she was a party girl and we know that she did a lot of drugs before she got pregnant. If I didn't mention that in her 16 and pregnant episode, I meant to. She did a lot of drugs before she got pregnant. So she's not a stranger to Klonopin, Xanax, weed, what the fuck ever she might be wanting to do. But here we have Gary asking her a straight up question. What did the doctor say? What was the prognosis? Stress. Just stress. Stress. That's a guilty ass fucking answer if I've ever heard one. And trust me, you guys, I've heard a shit ton of them. So I really unfortunately think here that she was just out looking to score. The fact that back in 2009, you could just walk into a health clinic and be like, I'm stressed, need drugs, and they just dole out Klonopin for you. Mm-mm-mm. I want a Xanax. I want a Klonopin.
You feel stressed out right now?
What? You're like 97% the reason why I'm stressed.
97% the reason why you're stressed, so Leah's 3%.
She does stress me, but 3%. I'm not really talking. Okay, Gary, I just mean that you really do stress me a lot. This, it's not you, it's this relationship. It stresses me out a lot. And you just sit there with your head back and say, I love you.
No, I'm trying. I don't want to say the wrong thing, and I don't want to fight, so I'm going to think of the most smartest thing to say before I say anything.
You don't ever say anything, Gary, so don't worry about it.
So I guess it's good that the medicine is helping her. I'm not really sure. Typically, I mean, obviously we know what happens. But typically when you introduce this kind of medication to a former addict or a party person or girl or what have you, it typically doesn't end well. So let's hope for Leah's sake that nothing negative happens because of this. And to those of us who have never, for some reason, watched Teen Mom before, I'm not sure what you guys were doing, but this will not be the last time that we encounter drugs with the moms. It's just the very first. That said, we don't know what Ryan is off doing either. He's about to be on a month-long trip away from Macy. Maybe that's where he was first introduced to opioids. But for now, we are shown a more calm Amber, one who, even though she was saying some pretty shitty things to Gary, can at least keep her cool about it. So we'll take it for what it is for now. The very first episode of Teen Mom ends with a montage of the four girls in the last place that we saw them, reflecting on what we've seen in this episode, what we know about them, what we learned about them, and what we might be able to expect going forward. The viewer is shown the symbolism of Leah standing at the window while Amber sits on the couch. We see Macy alone feeding Bentley. The loneliness is very strong in this scene, and so that's what's really being left with you. Once again, they gave Caitlin like the shortest fucking little scene in the montage. She's just looking straight ahead and then looking down in a disappointed manner. What the fuck are they doing to my girl Caitlin? This is not cool. Why are they shortchanging her? I wanted to talk more about them, but I could only work on what I'm given. I also don't want to lose your interest. I don't know how long this is going to be when I edit it down. And the scene rounds back to Farah in the car looking pretty fucking sad. So Farah gets two scenes in the montage and Caitlin gets like 20, not even 20 seconds, 15 seconds probably. So Farah's learning new things. Amber's trapped, Macy's alone, and Caitlin is something. Well, you guys, thank you so much for hanging out with me, getting high, and talking about Teen Mom. I'm so happy we were finally able to talk about Teen Mom. I hope you were able to follow along. Again, it's going to be a little bit of trial and error getting used to the new Teen Mom format, but I promise we will persevere. We will get you another episode, and please be sure to join us next time when we're talking about episode 2 of Teen Mom. How many chances? Until then, you can catch us on Instagram at ATTODpodcast on Instagram and the same handle on Twitter at ATTODpodcast on Instagram and Twitter. Or you can go old school and email ATTODpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's ATTODpodcast@gmail.com. That is the acronym for the show About This Time of Day. And I want to thank you again so much for listening. And just before we sign off here, I want to wish all of my listeners Happy holidays, happy 420. It is that time of year again, guys, so I hope you enjoy it. And you know what? Usually I go really hard, balls to the wall, lighting blunts all day, smoking, token, doing this, that, and the other thing, anything that I possibly can. But you know what? This year, even with my medical card, I think I'm just gonna take it easy, you know? Smoke a bowl instead of a blunt. Take a bite instead of a whole fucking candy bar. You know, keep it between the lines. I'm an adult. I can handle that.
Yeah, right. You're strung out on weed? Don't leave.